Welcome to How to Stop Climate Change. I'm your host, David Butler, and I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Russell, and my producer and daughter, Keaton Butler.
Our guests today are Ty and Brock Benefield, hosts of the Climate Pod podcast. Ty and Brock are brothers, and Ty is CEO of Hero Power, a company that allows electricity customers in Illinois to choose renewable energy over fossil fuel energy when they pay their utility bill. And now I'll turn it over to our hosts, David and Matt.
Hey, we're here with Ty and Brock Benefield from the Climate Pod and Hero Power, and it's great to have you guys on the show today.
Well, David, thank you so much for having us on.
How about you, Ty? You want to thank me too?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. This is a wonderful opportunity to be on your show.
Yeah, and we're also here with Matt. He's joined us, our co-host.
Hi, guys.
This is the first time we've ever had four people on the show, and also our first time to incorporate video. So that's kind of exciting. So how are you guys doing today, and how are you dealing with the lockdown?
Yeah, well, I think we're dealing with the lockdown by doing a lot of podcasting. So it's good to connect with you guys. I'm doing great today. Excited for the weekend. It's cool. It's always cool to connect with other people who are focused on climate and climate solutions. So that's why we're excited to be on the show. Ty, how are you doing?
I'm great. Like Brock said, we're doing a lot of podcasting, and we too are doing a lot of this over Zoom. I think it's just because Brock misses me.
Yeah.
We haven't, you know, in our 33 plus years together, this is probably the longest time that we've been physically away from each other. So it's great to have Zoom and the podcast to keep us connected.
As soon as we realize this is going to be a video interview, you start to wonder, man, wouldn't it be cooler if we were better looking? We would just have a much better, successful podcast.
You can always do a virtual background. It would be good if you could do a virtual avatar of yourself.
Yeah,
well.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, it negates the use of having a face for radio if you didn't have to go and show it every time you decide to talk to someone.
That's why we got in the podcast in the first place. Yeah. We wouldn't have to be out in the world. Yeah.
So how did you guys, you guys are brothers, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Just weirdly have the same unusual name. Which one of you is the older brother?
I am. Ty.
And how'd you get interested in climate change and kind of environmental work?
Yeah.
Well, in the first place?
I feel like this is going to be a super long answer, so I apologize. Just to strap in, because I don't feel like there was one, like there wasn't one thing in particular. And I remember my freshman year of college seeing An Inconvenient Truth, and what a remarkable documentary that was for raising awareness around climate change. And I remember really starting to think about this, you know, seeing that hockey stick growth chart and realizing how scary, you know, this path we were on with regards to climate change was, and part, you know, being introduced to things like parts per million and greenhouse gases. And I think that documentary was pretty formative. And I remember a couple years after that, reading, I know Thomas Friedman's kind of lame, but reading his Thomas Friedman books, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, and understanding like, but the energy grid and inefficient grid and how we needed to electrify the transportation and electricity sectors. But like even growing up, like Ty and I were very fortunate growing up that we had parents that wanted to get us involved in nature and appreciate the environment. Like we're here in Indiana, and we both live in Indianapolis. This morel mushroom hunting is very big in Indiana. Ty and I are avid morel hunters. We also had the fortune when we were younger of scuba diving. And Ty and I, when we were in college, took a trip to the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. And I remember, and Ty, you can talk about this as well, I remember like both the beauty and the majesty of the Great Barrier Reef, because you're seeing these tremendous life forms, but also you could start to see the bleaching that was happening in the reef as well. And I think that this lifelong socialization to nature has kind of driven my attitude toward appreciating nature, and then also understanding the climate crisis and how essential it is for everyone to be addressing this issue.
Yeah, exactly. And just echoing those thoughts, I mean, we were able to see, you know, the tangible impacts of what a warming ocean had on those coral reefs. And as we kind of learned more as to what was causing that, I think that's what really drove our interest and our passion in understanding more about climate change and, you know, doing whatever we can to promote the science and, you know, tell more people about what exactly is happening. So we were very lucky. And, you know, we're just trying to do our small part.
Yeah, we're also 90s kids. So you're talking Captain Planet, dinosaurs, which ends with the whole family getting killed off by climate change. Bill Nye, the science guy, like all the pop culture we were consuming as kids. I think it sowed the seeds for climate activism later in life.
Yeah, I think it was the Lorax for me.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
An earlier generation of climate cartoons or environmental cartoons. So, you know, you guys have really kind of made this a big part of your careers now. So sort of how did you start going in that direction? Did you major in environmental science or something like that in school?
I did actually. I took some classes as an undergrad that did afford me the ability to learn more about climate change and environmentalism. And, you know, I took some of what I learned from there and took it to my, you know, once I decided I was going back to grad school, I wanted to do something. I wanted to start a company that did something around sustainability. And I learned in grad school about, you know, the energy grid and its impact on climate change and carbon emissions. I felt like, you know, maybe this might be my, you know, my opportunity to build a business that, you know, did something to combat climate change or reduce carbon emissions. So my co-founder and I out of Northwestern, we launched a company that helped people become more energy efficient with web and mobile apps. And then that company has actually evolved into Hero Power, which is the company that we're running now. And that pairs energy efficiency with supporting renewable energy. And it tracks, you know, Hero Power, the kind of the path of Hero Power really tracks our understanding of, you know, what we need to do to kind of hit our renewable energy goals. It's a combination of both energy efficiency and, you know, a transition to cleaner fuel sources. So that's, you know, that's kind of the very short version of how we got to where we are with Hero Power today, which is basically, you know, the most affordable and really the easiest way for anyone to support renewable energy. That platform launched just about 7 months ago in November of 2019, and we could not be more excited to bring that app or that platform to the rest of the country.
When you were getting started, you mentioned about you're starting your own company. It's a big decision. You're investing, raising money, finding investors, and all the rest of that. You must have had competition or ideas of other areas you could go into. You were interested in. What swung you specifically in favor of sustainability? What made you decide, you know what, this is where I'm putting my chips down? And what can you give some examples maybe of the other things you might have even thought about investing in? Or did this have you hooked right from the start?
Sure. Yeah, no, I knew that I wanted to launch a company in the sustainable realm. I did not know what that was going to be. I think the very first idea that we came up with was a smart plug that automatically, you know, turned off electricity to those vampire appliances. Now this was back in like 2012, so we might have been just a little bit early to the Internet of Things space, but that transformed into, you know, into more energy efficiency and helping utilities help their customers become more energy efficient. And really that came from understanding the market through, you know, some of the classes that I was taking, but really understanding what customers wanted. That was a big thing for us, is to be able to communicate with potential customers about, you know, what it is that they felt was lacking, what they wanted to accomplish, and the barriers that kept them from accomplishing that. Could we build a product that made it easier, more accessible for them to do that? And that, you know, that idea of customer development has really driven everything that we've done at Hero Power from the very, very beginning to where we are now. It was just the idea of, we're going to build a product that people want instead of a product that, you know, I think is cool. And that has really helped us, you know, achieve great adoption with our product and satisfaction with our product, because, you know, we're building things that that people tell us that they want us to build.
Do utilities actually want to help their customers be more efficient?
It's a great question. And that's part of the reason why we pivoted to become an energy company ourselves, because, you know, what we found is, you know, the first version of our business, we were building these digital platforms for utilities, for other energy companies, and consumers overwhelmingly wanted to become more energy efficient, obviously to save energy or save money on their energy bill, but also to support more renewable energy. And we could not get our clients, the energy companies, to agree to do that. And that was what we found really frustrating, because our end users, they really wanted this, the demand for clean energy, for energy efficiency, it's there, it's just not being met. And that's the reason why we started Hero Power, to make it, you know, easy, affordable, accessible to anybody that wants to support clean energy. They can do that with Hero Power. And, you know, we can go around the utilities to do that.
How have you noticed your consumer base, that end user? Have they changed over time? Is it the same sort of people, but just a bigger group of the same sort of people? Or is it changing in the diversity or geography or otherwise?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you the one thing that we've definitely seen from our consumer base over the entire, you know, lifespan of our company is that as people learn more about energy efficiency, climate change, they feel like they need to do more, whether that's they want to learn more, they want to contribute more. It's almost like we can develop greater demand for these things as people become more knowledgeable of the problem and the solutions. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's one thing that we try to, we curate a lot of great information on the Hero Power platform, and we curate a lot of great solutions as well. And we've just been so, I don't know about surprised, but we've just been so happy to see how much that demand for better, you know, cleaner solutions has increased over time from our customers who may not have initially joined because of that, right? But as they, you know, as they learn more through our platform, we've definitely created that demand. So it's been so wonderful. We absolutely love, you know, how we've seen our customers progress over time.
In a second, I would like to go into more detail about how Hero Power actually works, but can we beat up on the utilities for just a couple minutes before that? You know, we have these big regulated monopoly utilities, so they're given all of these customers. They don't have any competition a lot of times, you know, depending on the state. And so I feel like they're a lot more interested in building relationships with regulators and legislators than they are with their customers. You know, that's where they spend all their money. So what do you think we could do to change that situation, you know, to make them more beholden to the customers and fix it so they're not rewarded for using more fossil fuels and wasting more energy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And there's several ways to do this, one of which, and there are some states that have done this, but basically decoupling the value that utilities get from the assets that they build and the electricity that they actually sell from the rest of their business model. And, you know, that's really the core of the issue right now. For most utilities, they get a guaranteed return on their assets, on their investments, right? So if you want to keep giving money back to your investors, you've got to keep building these big power plants, right? So utilities have invested a lot in these large coal and natural gas plants, and by shutting them down before their expected end of life, they're stranding a lot of these assets, right? And that's really bad for utilities because they have baked into their into their rate, into their into the model on how they're getting paid and how they get that guaranteed return on asset. It's a significant, you know, amount of revenue from these coal plants or natural gas plants. So by shutting those down, they have two options, really. It's to default, which has happened, or it's to increase, you know, increase rates for their customers, which they don't want to do either. So, you know, it's really, while the utilities, I'm not giving the utilities a pass on this by any means, but it's really how the states have set up the regulations that incentivize utilities to do this. There are things that we can do, alleviating some of the, you know, the stress from those distressed assets would be very, very helpful for utilities, obviously. And just making, just changing the rules, changing the way utilities make money would go a long, long way in getting them to change, you know, how they behave. If we can, you know, the nice thing about having a monopoly utility is that they are beholden to state regulators and, you know, utility commissions. So if those utility commissions are committed to greater, you know, greater renewable energy on the grid, there are things that the regulators can do. We're just not seeing enough of that at the state level or definitely at the federal level.
Are you noticing much difference between states, or are they all taking a broadly similar approach?
It's wildly different. It's from state to state. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, as we are working with utilities and energy companies across the country, that was a difficult thing for us to navigate, was exactly, you know, the rules that were unique to each state. You know, for HeroPower, for example, we're only able to sell our competitive electricity product in 13 states in the U.S. because only in 13 states do consumers have choice in who supplies their power. So I live in Indiana, which is not a choice state, but HeroPower is available in Illinois, which is, you know, just 150 miles away, and, you know, it is a choice state. So, you know, that's a one example, but the, you know, the renewable portfolio standards that are different from state to state. We don't have one here in Indiana. That's just another example of how things differ, you know, so greatly here in the U.S.
So one of the best things we could do would be to demand better renewable energy regulations and policies at the state level, right?
Exactly. The way the electricity regulation in the U.S. is so local, state level regulations and even city level regulations would go a long, long way.
Do you see that as setting quotas for the amount of renewables coming in, or is it a positive taxation framework, or maybe it's a suite of all of these things?
Yeah, I think it's a suite of the things. I think, you know, there's right now a federal renewable portfolio standard would be fantastic, right? Because it would force a lot of states who have failed to take action to do just that, right? Now, there's plenty of states that have implemented high renewable portfolio standards. And a federal policy might not, you know, lift those states, but states like Indiana who have failed to do this would be greatly benefited from greater renewable energy, because we know not only is it better for us, is it better for the environment, but it generates a ton of jobs. And as long as we're transitioning to a cleaner energy future, and that transition is just, and it takes into account, you know, the lives and the communities of those people who have devoted their, you know, their careers to, you know, to powering the United States, even though it was, you know, with dirty power, as long as we can help them, you know, transition to a cleaner future, and we can help the communities that have been so greatly impacted by global warming and the pollution, as long as we can come up with a transition like that, then we definitely need to move toward regulations that can do that.
Well, Ty, we breathe dirtier air here in Indiana. You know, Indiana is a state that has had so few environmental protections over the years that we have, I forget what the statistic is, but like per capita or per square mile, we have some of the highest pollution levels in the country, which is remarkable because we're Indiana and we don't have all the metropolitan amenities, all the reasons you live, you know, in cooler cities and states. We don't have those things in Indiana, yet we still have the remarkable pollution. And I met, you know, we were seeing when COVID-19 broke out, state health officials talk about how death rates in Indiana were likely going to be higher because of the exposure to air pollution and other pollutants. And I just think about what you know, to have that happen in our hometown. We love living in Indiana, but we would love to have stronger environmental protections and for state regulators and federal regulators to do their job so that we're not forced to pick between living where we want to live and breathing clean air. And I think about what a tragedy that is. Like Ty, you mentioned, not only are we losing out on those jobs and powering our economy, but we're living you know, more unhealthy lives as a result. And that's just tragedy.
Yeah, it's really a shame because you have a huge wind source there and lots of wind turbines. You shouldn't really have to have a lot of fossil fuel power there.
Absolutely. I mean, we're a state that's extremely well positioned to being at the forefront of developing renewable energy. And man, wouldn't it be nice if we took advantage of it to a greater degree?
Can you go step by step through like your customer experience and how it works, what exactly they're purchasing, and how the utility is involved in the process?
Of course, yes. So when a person takes the 2 minutes, and that's really all that it takes, to join Hero Power, we basically become their supplier. So we're now in charge of procuring the supply for a customer. And this is the clean energy program. We've got a couple other programs that we can talk about, but the clean energy program, which we launched last November, we become the customer's supplier. And what that means is when, you know, the customer, after they join, their basically experience with their utility does not change. They continue to pay their utility for their electric bill because the utility continues to provide the services that the utility is really good at. You know, they continue to provide the transmission and the distribution. They make sure that the lights stay on. All of that stays the same. But by joining Hero Power, when our customers pay their utility for their monthly bill, the utility then pays Hero Power. And we take that money and we use it to procure that electricity. And in addition to buying their electricity for them, we go and we buy renewable energy certificates and enough of these renewable energy certificates to match 100% of our customers' electricity consumption. And we do all of that without actually charging them any more than that what they're currently paying their utility. So we go buy these renewable energy certificates from Osage Municipal Wind Farm. And now this Osage Municipal Wind Farm has an additional revenue stream from their wind turbines. So they're selling the electricity and they're also selling these renewable energy certificates. And this added revenue stream is really important to, you know, to wind developers or solar developers, anyone that's developing renewable energy projects, because it gives them, you know, gives them an extra cash flow to make their investment in these new projects or in new projects more viable, more financially viable. So, you know, from the customer's perspective, they really don't have to do anything other than join Hero Power. We take care of the rest. And it's really the simplest and most affordable way for anyone to support renewable energy because they're doing it every time they pay their bill and they're not paying any more for it.
In essence, this means that your energy, although perhaps sourced from a traditional supplier, is offset 100% by a certified renewable energy credit. So even if your TV actually used electrons that came from a fossil fuel source, the money that you pay the utility goes to put exactly the same amount of energy back on the grid as green energy.
I bet the utility loves that arrangement too.
Well, yeah, I mean, Illinois is a great example because the Illinois regulators decided that that the utilities can't actually make money off of the electricity that they sell. So for them, we're not actually taking any profit away. It's a competitive state. The electricity suppliers are able to profit on the electricity supply, and that's where we are, but the utilities aren't. So again, it's just strictly, it's so much on the regulators to come up with innovative models to incentivize companies like us to come in, create competition, create a better product for the customer, that customers value, and that creates greater environmental impact. And that's what's happened in Illinois.
And I just wanted to inquire, like, how much are you growing? Are you seeing this growth? You mentioned earlier on this 13 states predominantly that you're operating in at the moment. Are you growing the market share in those states? Or are you looking to try and change the framework in the other states so you can access those markets?
Yeah, right now, so with the clean energy program, you know, we're really just focused on Illinois. This is our first state that we've tested out this model, testing if this works. We are growing rapidly in Illinois, and we have plans to expand the clean energy program to the other 13 states that offer competitive choice. Now, we've just released our solar share program, which, you know, allows us to operate in all 50 states here in the U.S., regardless of electric choice. So we have expanded, you know, our footprint beyond Illinois, not through the clean energy program, which is the supply product, but with the solar share product.
Can you talk us through solar share? Give me a bit of context about it. Thank you.
Yeah. So solar share, think of solar share like Airbnb, but for solar panels. And instead of renting out your home to, you know, some traveling stranger, you're renting out your roof to someone that wants to support renewable energy, but just might not have the time or the means or the access to a sunny roof to add solar panels themselves. So Hero Power customers in Illinois can actually get free solar panels installed on top of their roofs if they're, you know, if they own a home that has good access to the sun. They can get those panels installed for free, and it's actually SolarShare subscribers throughout the country that are paying for those monthly solar payments, and the amount of money that's generated from those solar panels on our, you know, on our Hero Power customers' roofs in Illinois is redistributed to the people, to the SolarShare subscribers that are funding those projects throughout the country. So for $5 per month, you can subscribe as a SolarShare subscriber to a project, and you get rewards based on how much that project generates every year. And for the most part, you know, for $5 a month, you're going to get $60 worth of rewards every year. And rewards, we talk about, you know, products that further help you, you know, lower your carbon footprint. So energy efficient products such as LED light bulbs, smart power strips, things like that, things that will help you save money on your electricity bill. But basically, for $60 a year, you're going to get $60 worth of rewards back. So it's, you know, it's a no-brainer. You're supporting more renewable energy on the grid, and you're really not paying any more for it because you're getting these products that are worth about as much money as you've put in.
So is this kind of a situation sort of like offsetting your carbon? Like a company or a person could say, I generate this much carbon and I want to offset it. I could pay somebody to plant trees, but this is another option where you're paying somebody to put solar panels on roofs.
Exactly. And you know that you're contributing to more renewable energy on our grid, you know, here in the US. And you know, we're so far behind where we need to be right now. We have 100% renewable energy goals by the end of this decade, and we're at about 17% right now. And we've actually taken a step back. Residential solar installations have taken a huge step back during this pandemic. And we've got so far to go, we can't afford to take a step back right now. So Hero Power is trying to make it easier to reduce the hurdles, reduce any barriers that are keeping people from installing rooftop residential solar. And, you know, that's exactly what we're doing with Hero Power. And our goal is to make it so easy for people to support renewable clean energy right here in the U.S.
Well, and Ty, one cool aspect of that is the fact that, like you mentioned, it pays you back. And I think, like, you know, I'm in a home right now that I don't expect to be in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years. So for me, putting solar panels on a roof is probably not the best option to get the rewards. But, you know, something like a smart power strip or LED light bulbs or smart thermostat, that's way more meaningful, right? Because you can take it with you when you move, and it still is allowing your home to reduce its carbon emissions, cut down on costs. You're saving money and helping the planet. And I love that idea of, like, meeting you where you are on your journey to better energy efficiency and helping to create more renewable energy in any way possible that you can, so that you're doing your part and you're also getting rewarded for it. I think that relationship's a really cool and beneficial one.
So if I'm a homeowner with a patch of roof, which isn't in Ireland, it's actually someplace with sun, and it has the possibility of actually generating some power. If I even have no particular interest in the climate, I can still get panels installed for free, and I'll be paid $60 a year or whatever else it is for having them in there. So there actually is an incentive for me, straightforward monetarily, to go with that. Have I got the basic principle?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you do rent your rooftop out to SolarShare, to Hero Power, then you actually get to keep 10% of the power that is generated from your panels every month. So, you know, it comes out to significantly more than $60 a year. But yeah, I mean, you get to keep 10% of that, and you didn't pay for any of it. So, you know, there is significant value to people who want to, want to contribute, or they don't want to contribute. They just like, you know, a 10% discount on their bill every month. That sounds pretty great too.
So Ty, you're talking to all the climate deniers that are going to see the How to Stop Climate Change podcast and be like, I want to know. Let me know. But you're right, Matthew. It works for everyone. Matthew, are you in Ireland now?
Yeah, I'm in Limerick at the moment, on the West Coast.
Fantastic. International podcast.
Come visit. We'd be delighted
love
to have you.
I'd love to.
Yeah, not tomorrow or the next.
Yeah,
we'll give it a few weeks.
It's a tough time to be traveling internationally, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, it might be a good time, though, to flee the United States and go to any other country where they've done a better job of kind of controlling the virus.
There you go.
Ireland would be one of those, I think.
Yeah, we're doing okay.
Are you guys sad that you're not able to go to the pub?
Oh, it is what I would do for a pint of Guinness. It is tough.
We'll be right back after this short break. If you love How to Stop Climate Change, please help us grow the show and reach more people that want to stop climate change. Share it with one friend who would love it too, or give us a review on your favorite podcast app. And if you really love the podcast, please consider a small donation. To learn how to support the show, go to howtostopclimatechange.com/support or patreon.com/howtostopclimatechange. And we would love to hear from you. Please send your feedback, questions, or suggestions to david@howtostopclimatechange.com.
So shall we talk a little bit about the Climate Pod?
I'd love to.
Yeah, when did you guys start that, and what inspired you to do it?
Well, it's funny, you were literally almost to the day of our 1 year anniversary, and it was Ty's idea. I've been podcasting for a couple of years on a variety of topics, and as I mentioned, we've long been concerned about the climate crisis, but, you know, at the time, I had no regular entry into the climate crisis. I wasn't belonging to any activist organization. This was stuff that I was very passionate about, but I had no outlet for talking about the climate crisis. And, you know, I have a journalism and a marketing background, right? I'm not a climate scientist. So even though I can understand the basic principles of climate change and the climate crisis, as we've learned over the last year of doing this podcast, despite the fact that the main facts of climate change aren't, you know, they're not changing, All this incredible research continues to come out every single week about climate change. There's always news about the climate crisis that helps shape our understanding of what needs to be done and the urgency with which we need to do it. So Ty came to me about a year ago and is like, hey, I want to be marking these things as they happen as well, and keeping myself accountable to having these weekly conversations so that I stay up on the latest news. And frankly, it gives us an excuse to talk to people that we've always wanted to talk to. We've just never had an excuse to, you know, to do it. And then we get to invite them on our show. We've had so many remarkable guests. I mean, MacArthur Genius Fellows. We had a conversation with Ted Danson and Tom Steyer, and just a name, and so many talented and brilliant activists that are leading this fight. And I joked around on the podcast this week, you know, Ty and I, the two least important voices you hear every week on the Climate Pod are the first two you hear. You know, Ty and I wanted to set up a platform to hear other people's voices and to understand what's leading the climate movement. We're not here to lead the climate movement. We're here to produce a really cool show. And, you know, we've been doing, to answer your question, we've been doing it for a year. And it's honestly one of the most joyous things I've ever done in my life. It is a pain in the ass to produce this podcast. It takes so much of my nights and weekends up is producing this podcast, but it is an absolute labor of love at the end of the day.
I feel your pain. It really does take a long time. But you guys have had some fantastic guests, really. Congratulations on a year anniversary. And
thank
some
you.
Of the people you've had on the show are amazing. So, Was it like a little scary the first time you invited one of your climate heroes to be a guest on the show?
Yeah, Ty, you got to talk about inviting Amy on the show, because that was a huge moment.
Yeah, I mean,
Amy Westervelt, you're talking about, right?
Right, mm-hmm. And she is. I mean, we could not be bigger fans of Amy Westervelt, and we reached out to her just a cold email. We obviously are fans of her podcast, the Drilled Podcast. I've listened to that. From its inception, and we reached out to her and we said, hey, we're thinking about starting a podcast. Would you be interested in being our guest? And she responded so quickly with a yes. And I think I called Brock. I said, Brock, now we have to do a podcast.
Yeah, right.
Agreed to talk to us.
That was for your first episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was our first episode.
So this makes me very jealous. I have also emailed Amy Westervelt. I have not heard back from her yet. So maybe you can help me write a better email.
Well, I think she was in between Drilled seasons. So we may have caught her at a good time. I think, you know, honestly, you will fight. Yeah. Sometimes it's timing. You can just get a little lucky. And I think we may have gotten lucky with that one and several other people as well.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
But I remember how, you know, frankly, it was very intimidating. And it's often intimidating to be able to speak to people who have who are just so remarkably knowledgeable and who have been in this work for years, if not decades. And I'm always just remarkably impressed by people in the climate movement of just who these people are, but also how kind they are. You know, I think our show, we've been really proud with how our show has grown over the first year. And that has been in large part as a result of people coming on the show, really, you know, putting their time and effort into helping our show be great for nothing in return, and then sharing our show. And you know, I'm proud of the work that we do. I think we put a lot of research and we work really hard to make it a good show and to ask great questions. But we're just a platform for other people to share their knowledge. And the fact that we've had such remarkable people share their knowledge, it means so much to us. I can't express that enough.
Have you any had any feedback from your audience that has caused you to change the show or your approach in any feedback in any way?
They all think Ty is just terrible, so we're trying to slowly push Ty out of the pot.
Yeah. All right, a little sibling rivalry.
That's right. Yes, got to keep this fresh.
They don't like my jokes. I think that I think Ty, for the most part, our feedback's been really positive. I know we get some great guest recommendations. It was really cool. About I guess it would have been a few months ago, we had a listener write in from Perth, Australia, and telling us that when the bushfires broke out, she was scheduled to attend a lecture by Dr. Michael Mann, and that lecture had been canceled because of the bushfires had broken out. You know, Dr. Mann ended up leaving Australia when COVID-19 pandemic broke out, and she had missed that lecture. And she said, you know, it would be amazing if you guys could have Dr. Mann on the podcast. And we forwarded that note to Dr. Mann, and he, you know, joined the show. And I love, you know, and of course, everyone wants Dr. Michael Mann on their climate podcast. It's no secret. But I love the idea that, you know, listeners are saying, we really appreciate your approach. This is who we want to hear you guys talk to next.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Very similar to yourself, Brock, I wanted to get involved with this with David because it kept me current and up to date with the science, with the trends and where it's going.
Yeah.
You guys are part of the green economy now. You've made a business out of this. You've got businesses going. You're showing that it can be profitable. And again, selfishly, I'd like to be able to, I come from a scientific discipline. I'd like to be able to make sustainability, environmental work, something that's core to my business offering or otherwise. So I'm interested to see how you're hoping to grow the podcast. Where are you going to take it next? Is it a case of just growing the market share, getting more listeners in? Or do you actually like have a vision of expanding it, growing it, or otherwise?
I'm going to take this one, Ty. I truly have no vision for growing this podcast. I do not care whether or not, I mean, I care whether we grow the podcast because I want more people to think and care about the climate crisis. We're so privileged to be able to do the show and to have these conversations with amazing people. I will love it if more people find the show. And we, you know, again, we've been growing at a pretty sustainable clip, but this is a labor of love. We're not looking to make this into some, you know, media empire, which would be amazing if we could, but you know, it's just, this is independent media, and this is a topic that we're so passionate about, and it's just a nice side project, and it's a nice thing to do every week. I just want to put it out there, do the absolute best job that we can, and if people love it, they love it, and I hope that they do. But you know, this is just, it's like we talk about it, you guys know, it's really, really hard, but it's at the end of the day, it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. So whatever happens to the podcast, happens to the podcast.
Yeah. You can find YouTube videos where, you know, people will walk you through doing a podcast episode in like 35 minutes or something.
Right.
Like to strangle those people. That's not the truth.
I mean, you can do it, but you're going to sacrifice the reason to listen to the podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you guys you're not trying to be like the Joe Rogans of climate podcasting and get $100 million licensing deal from Spotify or anything.
Look, if Spotify is listening and they have $100 million check at their disposal, we'll consider it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take it, but we won't pay for it kind of thing. Yeah.
You'll have your lawyers look at.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, Ty, Brock, do you guys have anything else that we didn't cover that you would like to talk about?
No, I just wanted to say congratulations on this, guy. I know, starting the show and knocking out episodes and keeping on this continuous track. Those early days for us were, you know, the first string of episodes were some of the most challenging. So just congratulations on the show and what you guys are doing. This is so fun. And the fact that you guys invited us on, we couldn't be more appreciative.
Well, it was fantastic to have you, and thanks so much for a very interesting conversation. Good luck with all of your projects.
Thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of How to Stop Climate Change, please give us a review or share the show with a friend. If you'd like to support the show, please head over to howtostopclimatechange.com/support. All donations will go to cover expenses and help me pay my daughter, Keaton, for all the time she spends editing and producing the show. I couldn't do this without her.
Music for this episode was done by Avery Reedy, Jerry Leonard, and myself, Keaton Butler. Our theme music is by Juices.